Well, those are going to be staying here. Turn to Saul, turn to Proverbs. Back on my my obsession for the last few weeks on the way Christians ought to dress. Maybe there's a lot more to it than that, but it seems pretty trivial, especially in the minds of many people. They think, you know, why are you making an issue out of it? In fact, most preachers are not going to make an issue out of it simply because, well, it's controversial and it's hard to define. It's hard to be specific. And there's just about as big a problem with judgmentalness, pointing the finger and looking down your nose at other Christians as there is in dressing immodestly and what have you. So I can see why many Christians are not going to do it. However, I do believe God has a viewpoint. And that's what I'm trying to get across, God's viewpoint. However, after you sing a song about the wonderful blood of Jesus and his redemption, and then the wonderful grace of Jesus, and then the wonderful love of Jesus, it seems pretty trivial to be talking about dress codes, right, and things like that. So bear with me. I'll try to get past that. I wish Donnie had picked songs that are a little bit less exciting or whatever. Let me have some, you know, some moment in the sun. Just a moment, anyway. But no, that is those tremendous songs, and love it, and I just enjoy singing about it. It makes me want to preach about something like that rather than this. But I'm going to finish this up. I do believe God has a viewpoint. And I don't think there's much we can do to solve any of the problems that we have. I think the world is headed that way no matter what we do. And so even if we get it right, that's not going to solve the bigger problem, which is the way the world is and the way the world is going. So it seems like it's sort of a waste of time. I don't think it is, though, because someday you're going to meet God and he's going to have some questions for you. We are accountable, folks. We have liberty, but we are accountable. And we're going to have to give an account someday to God about our decisions. And I just personally think it's indecoroso. How do you say that? Indecoroso. Inappropriate for Christians to dress inappropriately. It's inappropriate for Christians to dress inappropriately. That I bet you didn't know that before. You hadn't thought about that. I just don't think it is comely. It's not comely for Christians to dress like the world. I think we ought to be a little different. Now, I don't think we need to be stodgy and prudish. I don't think we got to dress like Amish people. I really don't. We don't have to be like nuns. No, we can dress nicely and smartly and fashionably and beautifully without being provocative and without being immodest. I think that's all possible. And I think that's what we ought to aim for. Now, I dealt with a lot of stuff, and we're not absolutely prohibiting anything. We're not trying to prohibit anything like, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that, and you got to cover your elbows, you got to cover your ankles and all that. We're not dealing with that. The New Testament clearly points us to an inner focus, a focus on what our responsibilities are. But I do believe that there are some concrete criteria by which you should make the judgment. God has given us some understanding through the scriptures, some guidelines to help you make that judgment. And it might be difficult for you as a woman to make the judgment about how you dress, how that affects men. That might be difficult for you. And I understand that. And you know, there's some leeway for it. There's some leeway for you to be slightly wrong. But don't be exceedingly wrong. Let's have some criteria. Let's just have some conservativeness in our thinking, in our mind, and how we live, and how we dress, and how we speak. What does he say? Walk circumspectly, which means aware of your surroundings, aware of other people, aware of your responsibilities. Anyway, let's get right to it. We dealt last week with the fact that God talks about nakedness as being shameful. Not that we are embarrassed when we're naked. That is true. Most of us are. And that might have something to do with the structure of our society. And somebody else living in the backwoods of the Amazon jungle might not see nakedness as quite as, well, obviously they don't see it as shameful. But I'm not talking about whether we think it's shameful. I'm talking about God. And God says in the Bible that it's a shameful thing. There is a shame associated with being naked. Now, let's go to another point. Look at Proverbs. I said chapter 7 and verse 10. Talks about this young man he saw. He looked out the window, saw this young man, not terribly wise young man. But he gets into verse 10 and says, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and subtle of heart. He goes on and explains how she is. She's loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in the house. But it says something about her attire, the way she was dressed. She was dressed with the attire of a harlot. Do we know what the attire of a harlot is? Don't we all pretty much know how hookers dress, how prostitutes dress? I mean, if you've ever seen I've been to some low-life neighborhoods in different cities, lots of different cities, and I'm telling you, they're out there, and you know who they are. I mean, unless you're really oblivious, and there are some people who are truly oblivious, but most of us can discern, oh, there's a girl with the attire of a harlot. Now, does that mean she was a harlot? Well, if you read on, she wasn't a harlot. She was just dressed like one. Now, if a prostitute dresses like that, she's got a reason to. She's trying to attract men, right? But what about a woman who dresses like that and she's not a harlot? Well, she's trying to attract men too. It's just not for money. For some other reason. And there's lots of reasons. There's lots of reasons. I think one of the big reasons is there's a confusion about beauty and sexuality. Because nowadays it's really hard. For example, I'll tell you what. Right now, what I know of as the attire of a harlot, you can go to Walmart and see a 13-year-old girl wearing it. This is no exaggeration at all. A 13-year-old girl, or you can go to Walmart and look in the aisles at what they're trying to sell 13-year-old girls. Or the pictures of 13-year-old girls up on the advertisement little hangings. They'll have them dressed, and these are young adolescent girls dressed in the attire of a harlot. And we all know what the attire of a harlot is. Stop it with the rationalizations and the gotcha, because you can turn it around and say, well, somebody else and this, that, and the other thing. And yeah, you got all kinds of arguments, but come on. If you're looking for God's viewpoint, pay attention. He says, I noticed this girl, this boy, he's not very smart, and he's walking down there, and Solomon's just observing. He says, and I noticed this woman, and she was dressed like a harlot. And we've all seen that. This is God trying to give you just an idea of his viewpoint. His viewpoint. God's viewpoint. Look at Isaiah 3:16. God had a lot of complaints about Israel over 100 years before he destroyed them. That's the northern kingdom of Israel. This is Isaiah, and he's prophesying in the time before the northern kingdom is destroyed. And he has a lot of complaints about them. You read chapters 1 and 2 and all, you'll see that he's got some complaints. But here's another complaint. Isaiah chapter 3, look at verse 16. Moreover, the Lord saith, because the daughters of Zion are haughty, and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go, making a tinkling with their feet. Therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will discover their secret parts in the day that the Lord will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments about their feet, and their cauls and their round tires like the moon. I'm not sure what these ladies were wearing, but... The chains and the bracelets and the mufflers, the bonnets, the ornaments of the legs and the handbands and the tablets and the earrings, the rings and nose jewels, the changeable suits of apparel, the mantles, the wimples and the crisping pins, the glasses and the fine linen and the hoods and the veils and et cetera, et cetera. Instead of a sweet smell, it's going to be a stink and all that stuff. God says, you know, I really don't like this haughty attitude of these women in Israel. Now, there's all kinds of complaints about Israel. There's all kinds of complaints about adulteries and complaints about idolatries. Read the rest of the book of Isaiah. But amidst all of those complaints that God has, legitimate complaints about the way Israel was living, and God did have a viewpoint about how they were living. He sent it to his prophet to let them know. But he also had a complaint about the daughters. The daughters, these people, these girls, these women, they had a certain attitude. They had an attitude, and the attitude showed up in how they were dressed. And God said, I'm going to mess with their dress. I'm going to mess with the way they are. They're going to be really humiliated. And that's what he was trying to say. He's going to get rid of all that stuff they counted on. They were very, what do you call it, sure of themselves because of the way they were dressed. You ought to be careful anyway, I'll just let you know, to make your self-confidence based on how you're dressed or what you look like. And that's one reason why he says over there in the New Testament, and these are the principles to dress simply, he says, don't make it about your outer person. Don't fix up the hair and paint your eyes and put all the jewelry on so that you have some self-confidence that way. He says, make it about the inward person. Turn it into an improvement of the feminine graces. And you just see how gorgeous a woman can be if she truly improves her feminine graces. And we've dealt with the feminine graces. These are some tremendous characteristics. Even men need to get some of those graces, the gracefulness and the gentleness and the nurturing attitude. And these things are what he says there in 1 Peter 3. He says, a meek and a quiet spirit. Wow. But what we had here was haughty women demanding their rights. You know any women like that? Demanding their rights? It is uncomely. It is uncomely. All right. First of all, just to consider God's point of view. God does have a point of view. Just remember that. All right. Let's look at the point that I'm trying to make here that good men fail. I want you to consider this possibility, ladies. Really good men can fall into sexual sin. Really good men fail. I'm not talking about the stupid, silly, worldly, evil men that spend their weekends at the bars. I'm talking about godly men, preachers, and good godly husbands and hard workers. They fail. They can fall into sexual sin. We know about it. Because of David, 2 Samuel 11 says, from the roof, David saw a woman washing herself, and the woman was very beautiful to look upon. Now, if ever any man on earth could be considered a spiritual man, I think David should be considered. Just read the decisions that he made in his life. Like when he had two opportunities to kill his mortal enemy, and he refused to, saying, I gotta let God do that. Most of us are just not that spiritual. We're not that far thinking. We're not that heavenly minded. So this man was a heavenly minded man, and he fell into adultery because of eyesight. He saw a beautiful woman, and she was washing herself. I don't know the circumstances of that. I just know it happens all the time. This is constant. In fact, I can name off to you probably dozens of preachers that I know personally that are no longer preaching or that have damaged their ministry because they failed in this sexual problem. They committed adultery or they did something else. And most of you know some high profile cases, people that we know that had a reputation for being a preacher or what have you, and they dragged God's name in the mud because they went and failed. You talk about Jimmy Swaggart, or you talk about, I'm not going to get into all their names, but poor Jimmy Swaggart, I mentioned him. The fact is, I cannot tell you that they're not real Christians. I don't know that. I think they probably are good Christians and real Christians. And that someday we're going to be with them in heaven and have good fellowship with them. But they failed in that issue. They failed on that point. Let's see. Galatians. I'm sorry. That's not what I'm looking for. Oh, there we go. 2 Corinthians 12:21. What does Paul say to the Corinthians? 2 Corinthians 12. That's right toward the end of 2 Corinthians. Some of the last things he told them. He says, verse 20. 2 Corinthians 12:20. For I fear, lest when I come, I shall not find you such as I would, and that I shall be found unto you such as you would not. lest there be debates, envyings, wrath, strifes, backbitings, whisperings, swellings, tumults, and lest, when I come again, my God will humble me among you, and that I shall bewail many which have sinned already, and have not repented of the uncleanness and fornication and lasciviousness which they have committed. What is he saying about this church? Corinthians, they were a pretty good church, and they had some things going for them. You read some of the stuff that they were doing, and Paul exhorting them. These were real Christians, but he says, I'm really afraid of you. You as a church, I'm afraid of you, and I'm afraid that if I show up to visit you, I'm going to find a whole bunch of lasciviousness and fornication and uncleanness among you. You know why he had to worry about that? Because good Christians fail. Good Christians can fall into this kind of sin. And how do they fall? Wanton eyes. It's because they can't help but see. Now that doesn't make sense, does it? This doesn't make no sense. How about 2 Peter 2? I probably ought to skip some of these. This is fairly... 2 Peter chapter 2, look at verse 18. It says, for when they speak great swelling words of vanity, they allure through the lusts of the flesh, through much wantonness, those that were clean escaped from them who live in error. So Christians get away. They get out of that lifestyle. They get out of that whatever. But then because of wantonness and lust of the flesh, something happens and they go back into that uncleanness. Hey, this is happening right now throughout Christendom in all the denominations. Oh, I'm telling you, and let me tell you something else. If somebody is in a position of notoriety, you get a television ministry or whatever, the devil's after them and he wants to humble them and he wants to destroy their ministry. And one of the best, weapons he has to do that is sexual sin. Now, is it really the fault of all the ladies wearing their mini skirts and all that? No, that's not the fault. You're gonna have to get up, you're gonna have to put up with that no matter what. But how about all these preachers that fall into sin with women in their congregation? You guys heard of the Pence rule? The Pence rule, because, Vice President Pence mentioned that he wouldn't travel in a car with a woman that's not his wife alone. Well, I was taught that when I was a young man, a young preacher. They said, don't ever do that. And we try not to do that. We try to avoid all appearance of evil. We don't want anybody to wonder, just to wonder. So we try not to, like, I won't go to have a Bible study with a woman. And I'd have to take my wife or let her do it. And we would always be careful like that. That's the Pence rule. And the reason why that rule is important is because a lot of preachers fall because of that. Man, it's dangerous. It's dangerous. All right, that's the second point that I wanted to make. Here's the third point. That failure is in the heart. Now, let me admit something. Temptation itself is not the sin. Right? Can't we say the temptation? I mean, to be tempted, that's not where you're sinning. The fact that a woman is dressed in a provocative way and it makes you tempted, and it does. If a woman is, I don't care. I don't care how, unless there's something actually defective in you, man, you're going to be, it's a fleshly thing. There's something built into us. In fact, no other species is built this way. There is no other species that has cause of attraction, of sexual attraction, the visual. There's no other species. It's nearly always something in the smell or something else. All the other mammals, all the other primates, all the other apes, they're not always sexual. And it's not always about the mind. In fact, the human mind is so different than all the other animals' minds in that it can constantly be forming and changing. And it's a very important thing for you to understand that your mind gets altered. But one way or the other, you understand that the visual attraction that men have for women is unique to humans. And it is in all of us. It's natural. So that we say that the failure is in the heart. We say that the temptation itself is not the sin. And you want to insist on that. That you can be tempted and still not have sinned. But I'm going to warn you about something. And that is that there's a huge gray area there. Because of what Jesus said in Matthew 7. He says, actually, that's not what I was looking for, but I'm going to read it anyway. Mark 7. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetous, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. He says this comes in the heart, and that's how men sin. And then what does he say over there about adultery? He says, you've heard it, it said, and they told us, it was Moses that said it, and it was even in the Ten Commandments. He says, thou shalt not commit adultery. He says, but I'm telling you, if a man looks upon a woman to lust after her in his heart, he's already committed adultery. Now you say that temptation itself is not the sin. I agree with you. The temptation is not the sin. But where's the line from the temptation, which is natural and normal in a man, where's the line then where all of a sudden it becomes a sin? You're tempted, haven't sinned yet. Then all of a sudden, Jesus says, if you lust after her in your heart, you're committing adultery already. Where's that line? Can you draw that line really clear? I don't know how to draw that line. Now, I realize there's something to do with intent. If you look at a woman to lust, right, there's your pornography. You look at a woman to lust. There's an intent. But drawing the line from where a beautiful woman walks by in a miniskirt and catches my eye, and they all catch my eye. I got news for you. All the billboards, they catch my eye. All the advertisements with a gorgeous woman on there just to catch your eye, they do. They catch my eye. But where does it start being a sin? Okay, they say a second look. What'd you say? The repeat. Or the intention. We could make it all that. But what I'm telling you is, you can't draw that line. I do not know how to draw that line. I don't say you say a second look, so if I just don't avert my eyes the first time, I'm okay. I just stare at her the whole time. No second look. There ain't no way to draw a clear line there. Intention, right? But isn't it my intention to look at beautiful women? It sure is. That first glance, it was my intention. I want to see. I don't know why, but I do. Oh, stop being so holier than thou, you bunch of hypocrites. Just stop it. Come on now. All right. You're right, temptation is not a sin, but there is such a gray area there that I don't know how to draw the line. And so, if you are causing that, young lady... All right, there's another point I want to make. And that is, this is extremely difficult for men. Overcoming is a tenuous thing. It certainly isn't a given. And it's never final. Old men fail at this. And I'm not old. But old men, like some of you out there, you fail at this too. Anyway, have you considered what God is expecting out of us men? Have you thought about that? What God expects of us? Not to lust, not to have sexual desire for the ladies out there when he makes them so beautiful and then they dress the way they dress. And God says, okay, yeah, here's your temptation now. Get after it, guys. Get out there and work in the world and live in the world and go to church with all these beautiful women and don't lust after them. Man, I tell you what, I really don't believe a woman has an idea what we have to go through or what the possibility of victory is. It ain't very good. Our expectation of victory where we would say I could go through the entire day and not fail at that. And I can hear some of you saying right now, oh, you pervert, why don't you get over it? I'm telling you, that's the way some people think. They think, well, you just must be really oversexed. No. No, I'm sorry. It is a struggle. It is a struggle for men. And then what women think, they ought to be able to just put up, I ought to be able to dress any way I want. Now, it is not an excuse. Like all those refugees over there in Germany that went on that rampage, they were rioting about something in their refugee camp. They weren't getting enough water. I don't know what it was. They were rioting about something. And so they just go through in this big riot, and they go through a neighborhood, and they just rape all the women. Now, that happened. They didn't announce it on the news very much because it was a hush-hush thing. They didn't want any reprisals against Muslim men. But these were Muslim refugees that went through and raped hundreds of women in Germany. And they wouldn't say anything about it. But the excuse that they had was it was the way they were dressed. If the women are dressed that way, they're asking for it. They deserve it. They're nothing but sluts. Now, that's the way they think. And that is not correct. They are incorrect. A woman can be dressed however, and that doesn't give you the excuse. But ladies, come on, stop and think about your responsibility here. You are being provocative when you dress in normal fashions nowadays. And I'm talking about the fashions they sell in Walmart. In fact, I've had arguments with my own daughters about what they're wanting to wear, what they're wanting to buy. And they've actually told me they don't sell clothes like you demand we wear. And of course, it's not true. And I won that argument. It's not true. They just don't sell pretty clothes like that. I mean, the kind that actually cover up your backside. Or the kind, you know, these kind of things, it requires a little bit of effort. But if you can't do it, if you can't figure it out, then you ought to start your own clothes or learn how to sew and make your own clothes. I don't know what you got to do, but seriously, stop and think about it from somebody else's point of view. Ladies, really, you should not be the cause of somebody else's failure. And we have plenty of failure in the church on this score. Okay, overcoming is not easy. Overcoming lust. When it's a matter of, well, let me read you something. I thought this was very interesting. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 2. Because this is what Paul says. Well, let's read verse 1. Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father. He's talking about a young minister. Here's a young preacher that Paul is trying to give some guidelines to. He says, treat older people like fathers, treat younger men as brothers. And verse 2, the elder women treat them like mothers, and the younger women treat them as sisters. And then he throws in this little thing, with all purity. You know why? Why did he have to say that? Because your mind is going to wander. You got this young man who's a minister. He's trying to serve people, and it's not easy to keep your mind pure. Oh, I could tell you some stories. One time I spent 5 weeks in Tabasco preaching out in the jungles or in these little villages out there. And, I was missing my wife, and I was tired. I was tired of the whole thing, but toward the end of it, this young, pretty Indian girl came, and she had a baby she had a shawl, like a little blanket tied around her, and the baby would hang in the back, on her back. And she was wanting to get saved, and so I was trying to explain to her how to be saved it was very important. I wanted her to know, you know, you can be saved too, and all that stuff. It's a very pretty, young Indian girl. Then this baby crawls around, drops her shawl, and starts breastfeeding right in front of me. He said, with all purity. That wasn't easy. I had to get up and go get somebody else to tell her how to get saved. You say, oh, you just have got, you got a real problem. Actually, my wife has told me you're worse than most men. Not all men are like you. Well, all the ones I know are like me. Man, I'm telling you. All right. I'm going to give you some principles, and I'm going to wrap this up. I do want to talk to you just a second, though, about that same thing, because it's a warning against pornography. There are several things you ought to consider when it comes to pornography. You're not supposed to lust after women that are not your wife. You can lust after your wife, but you're not supposed to lust after women that are not your wife. So pornography's wrong, okay? Let's just stop the argument. Let's stop this bit about being an art and being, you know, beautiful and whatever. It's not art and it's not beautiful, and nobody buys Playboy for the articles. All right? You got that? It's really clear. Every man knows the appeal of nakedness in women. Every man knows it. And all this now where they're sending pictures back and forth on the phone, listen, this is just wrong. It's all wrong from the very start what Jesus told us. It is wrong. If you're participating in that, stop it and stop the rationalizing. Stop it. Ladies, stop doing that sort of thing. And I could also mention that there's a wrong in the female pornography. There is a female pornography. It's called romance novels. So don't get all holier than thou, ladies. I actually picked up one and started reading it, and I'm thinking, wow, this is worse than what men do. So you guys be careful on judging us. But just let me point out something to you about pornography. Number one, it turns women into objects. Women just become their body parts. That's all they are. They're not people. They're not treated like people. And it changes your mind. It makes you think that they are just objects. It alters the mind. That's number two. It alters the mind. I don't know if you know about the human mind. The human mind, the brain, actually physically alters when you repeat a behavior. When you do something over and over again, it changes the actual structure of your brain. And then it's there. It alters your mind. It makes you think different. And when you're 70 years old, you'll still be thinking because you got that. They've called it like, I know it's not exact, but it's like having ruts. You got ruts in your thinking. And that's the way you go. Once you got those ruts, that's where you go. And you do that for the rest of your life. I can remember the first X-rated movie I saw when I was 16 years old. I remember it very well. It affected my mind. It affects me to this day. All right. It also changes. It makes sex the objective. Rather than what God says the objective is that bond between a man and a woman that allows you to last a lifetime of being best friends. But once that other thing happens where sex is just the objective, it's just a fun activity between consenting adults, that's what you think about sex, it changes everything. That's why I tell you, don't open that door. Just don't open that door. I've said it many times. If you open that door, it falls off its hinges, and you can never put the door back on. It's gone. There, that door, that's always open. Stay away from it. If you've gotten into pornography, don't go one step deeper. Not even one, because every step is another door. Because they get weirder and weirder. And pornography is progressive. What excites you right now won't excite you later. You'll have to go a little deeper to get the same kind of a high that you're getting right now from these Sports Illustrated things, you know, or these things that they have at the, on the, bookshelves. You see that? It's sort of a pretty pornography, what they call soft porn. It's where girls are just, you know, sort of in a slightly but that's not going to satisfy you after a while. You want to go a little deeper, and then you keep going deeper. And after a while, the Bible says you start lusting after men. Hey, I'm not making that up. It's right there in the Bible, Romans chapter 1. You start off one way, but you burn in your lust until after a while you're not satisfied with that stuff. And then you are completely transformed. Your mind is gone. And how do you get rid of it? How do you filter that stuff out? Let me tell you something. The Bible will help. You start reading the Bible will start clearing some things out. You know, Lake Erie used to be a sewage dump. And they stopped dumping the stuff in and started letting the rainwater take it out. And now it's still not, I wouldn't drink it, but it's still, it's a whole lot better than it used to be. I'm just telling you, practically, stop the pornography, just stop it. Take it off of your TV. So if you have to get rid of cable, that's fine. You can live without TV. You certainly can live without cable. But get rid of it. Stop it. If you got to get rid of the internet, get rid of the internet. I don't know what you have to do, but stop it. Don't go any deeper because it will change you and it will harm you. The Bible says those fleshly lusts war against the soul. That's what it says. Peter said that. Anyway, now I wanted to point out as a way of wrapping this up. There are several principles. I'm going to point out five principles just to remind you what we need to do on this. And I'm not putting you under a dress code. I'm not telling you, ladies, you can't wear certain kinds of clothes. And here in the church, we can do that. We can give you a dress code. Don't be coming dressed some ways. We'll come to you and we'll say, look, you can't keep coming like that. We've done it to some of you ladies, don't you? You can testify. You say, well, you weren't aware, but we had to go to you and say, look, don't be wearing that. And yeah, it's embarrassing and it's, you know, whatever. It's hard for us to do that, but we will do that here. But I'm not telling you how to dress on the beach. I'm not telling you how to dress when you go on your Saturday soccer outing. I'm not telling you how to dress your little kids. I'm not trying to tell you what you can do and what you can't. I don't want to be in charge of your wardrobe. I don't want that responsibility. So I want to give you these principles that you can understand. We've already dealt with the balance that we needed on the first day of this study. But here, how about this principle? Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. Be not conformed to this world. Don't be like everybody else. Don't dress like everybody else. I'm not saying be weird, but at the same time, you don't have to be like everybody else. If the skirt line starts going up, 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 like it did in the 60s, good grief, it just kept going up, up, up in the 60s, and by the early 70s, why bother? Why are you bothering wearing anything? It just doesn't make any sense. But you don't have to be that way. You don't have to have your skirt line keep going up. You say, but they don't sell it in the store. Well, you have to figure something out. All right, that was a good one. Be not conformed to this world. How about this one? Romans 14, 13. Be not a stumbling block to somebody else. You know how many times that word stumbling block, and it's talking about this. For example, Revelation 2:14. Revelation 2:14, you say, well, that's stumbling block. It's talking about what people eat and idolatry and stuff like that. No, no, no. Look at this. Revelation 2:14. I have a few things against thee because thou hast there that them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit fornication. You guys remember that stumbling block? He sent those pretty Midianitish women into the camp and got them to commit fornication. Ladies, don't be a stumbling block in the way you dress. That's a good principle, folks. That's a good one. There's several other verses I could read on that. How about this one? Not pleasing yourself or not promoting yourself. One of the reasons why it says dress modestly and dress simply is for you not to draw attention to yourself. That's the point. Now, obviously, if you're trying to be pretty, you want to draw some attention to yourself. So there's a line here you got to understand. You've got to be judicious about. However, there is an obsession with yourself that just goes way overboard. It's a narcissism. It's a self-promoting, self-focused, self-involved, self-interested kind of an attitude that ladies just want everybody to look at them. And when it doesn't work, you know, they're not really special. There's like billions of women out there. It's hard to compete, you know, and there's some really pretty ones and you're not going to be prettier than them. And if they're in the room, nobody's going to look at you. And so what do? You start going the wrong direction. You start showing other stuff just to get some attention. You got to stop that. Don't be pleasing yourself. All right. There's another one. Don't be fleshly. You guys realize that we're living in the flesh and there are some fleshly desires. But the Bible says be spiritual, don't be fleshly. Don't be aiming your desires at the flesh. Ah, there's lots of verses for this. How about Romans 7? Yeah, there's several I could have read, but I'm just going to wrap it up. I don't have much time. 7, look at verse 23. Paul says, I see another law in my members warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin which is in my members. Oh, wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death? You've got things about your body that you are warring against. You're trying to emphasize the mind. You're trying to emphasize the spiritual, not the fleshly. How does he say it over there in Galatians? The flesh lusteth against the spirit, and the spirit lusteth against the flesh. There's a war in your mind right now over what's going to be important to you. And you know what I've noticed? Is that we are way too fleshly. We are way too fleshly. And there's many, many verses on that. Now I want one more point. How about aware of God's viewpoint? Live aware of God's viewpoint. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 3. See if you want to know God's viewpoint. For this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that ye should abstain from fornication. You think God has a viewpoint? Yeah, he does have a viewpoint. Chapter 5, verse 22, abstain from all appearance of evil. God have a viewpoint? Well, there's others. All right, let me wrap it up here real quick. I don't think God is happy with the way Americans dress. But you say, well, God doesn't care about the outward. No, I think God is upset with the way Americans and Europeans dress. And of course now Asians are getting that way. And pretty soon it'll be the Middle East and the Africa. They're all going to go that way. It's a bad thing. But just because everybody else is doing it doesn't mean God approves. You read over there what we read in Isaiah. God has a viewpoint. God's not necessarily in agreement with the fashion that they sell at Walmart or Target or JCPenney's or Dillard's. He might not be in agreement with that fashion. And you ought to be way more preoccupied about God's viewpoint than you are about fitting in. Being liked. What about God? Now let me tell you something about preachers. Preachers might not want to touch this subject with a 10-foot pole because it causes controversy. But then someday they're going to have to talk to God and God's going to say, did you not realize that I had a viewpoint? That I wanted somebody to say something about what I think. And he has a lot of viewpoint. He did tell you what he thinks about nakedness, didn't he? He could not have said it. How could he have done it anymore? He said it many, many times. He tells you what he thinks about nakedness. It's a shame for you to be showing off your body. That's what God said. Now you have to make some judgments about how far to go, you know, because you don't want to be impractical in your dress. And so I've done this. I did it myself, and you're going to have to do it. But when we went to the beach, we didn't go buy store-bought swimsuits that just accentuate the female body. We didn't do that. And I got news for you. If you have to go get a bikini wax to go to the beach, you're not doing right. You're not doing right. You ought to stop and think about some things. Now, you don't want to be dressed in blue jeans when you go swimming at the beach. I get that. I understand. But can you not come up with some kind of reasonable compromise where you can be comfortable and yet not drawing sexual attraction to yourself? I think you can. And if you're not willing to be a little bit frumpy, well, you're going to have to answer to God, not to me. I personally think you ought to be willing to be frumpy. Make sure you don't go down that other direction. All right. I ran out of time. That's the end of this one. Come back next week for something brand new and fresh.